See, even with my artiness, like, my wife is a hobbyist as well, and the one thing that she does, bless her, which just, like, drives me mad, is she'll leave her brush in water.
Oh, don't do that, because that curls
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, no, there yeah, we go. Everyone's reactions are like, like, yeah, no, fucking hell, no.
That just hurts my soul.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I just cringe at
Have you ever done the old trick? This is prime ADHD, by the way. Have you ever done the old wet palette trick of use a wet palette and you're using it to do all your painting, then you come back 3 days later and you open it up and it's got indigenous life forms in it, but like, is this God?
Welcome to the In The Tank podcast. Get ready for an hour of hot 40K goodness coming in your ears. So you're in the tank now, baby.
We are live from the Battle Barn.
We are indeed live. Look at this. Welcome, everybody, to In The Tank Plato Special. Hello there, Plato. How you doing, mate?
Hello.
Nice to meet you, Plato.
Yeah.
I'm here at Casa de Stanton.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, indeed, beautiful. The Battle Barn itself, right? How are you finding the Battle Barn? Do you enjoy it? Is it cool?
It is a fantastic piece of work, given that Eddie built it.
What an accolade.
Oh, Plato, I'm going to love you for this episode. This is great. Like, fantastic. Your voice already had me quite a fan, but if we're going to, like, be ribbing Eddie throughout, this is going to be fabulous.
I aim to please. I flew 2,000 miles to be here.
You did.
Yeah.
You've made a big effort.
Specifically for Eddie. ITT didn't matter. It was just cherry on top. Bit of sprinkles as well.
Where did you fly from, chap?
I am originally from Romania. I kind of wander through the desert a bit, lived in Ireland for about 5 years, in the States for about 2 years, then love finally beckoned for me and I had to move back to my Romania to get married.
Aww, that's quite
cute,
actually.
To a fantastically wonderful human being, but everything else has just gone downhill from there. So I came back.
Yeah. So we've just done an event together. We did the Birmingham ITT together last weekend, and Plato stayed on a few extra days to do the podcast and also to do a stream at the Battle Barn tonight, which will be good fun.
Oh, fantastic.
So you will probably be listening to this live this evening, so it'll probably be just after this episode is finished. If you've listened to it when it came out, we'll be going live at 7:30 p.m. 7:30 p.m. UK time. So
log in. Very quickly, Plato, what is the war gaming scene like in Romania? Is it good?
It's pretty much up and coming.
Sure.
It was a bit scattered up until a few months ago. Myself and a few team members from WTC Team Romania, we opened a club. So shout out to them if they're watching.
Fantastic.
And it kind of picked up on the newer talent, because there were about 20, 30 people in the Bucharest area that we had no idea existed. Like, we had fully painted armies and... Where are these people?
And
we figured out that they didn't have a place to congregate, right? And it was very important for us to set community standards. It's especially important if you're an up-and-coming scene like Romania. It's not something established like in the UK or Ireland or Germany or the US.
Wow, wicked. Yeah. That's really cool. Thank you for letting us in on that. If I ever get international guests, I always want to hear how their communities are doing. Like, outside of the UK, because I think we're kind of spoiled in the UK, where, like, obviously it's kind of like the birthplace for, like, wargaming in general. So, like, you can basically stroll into any city and be inundated with events and stuff like that. So we're very lucky in that regard. But that's cool. Like, well done. And I hope your hobby community in Romania blooms and that you're one of your key components there. So one of the first things that we do every In The Tank episode is to do the classic GW manager, so what you're working on. So what are you working on, boys? Like, what are you working on? Plato, if you want to go first, mate, what have you been working on hobby-wise? What's been going on in your hobby world, so to speak?
So hobby-wise, I tried to upgrade my Iron Warriors army with Perter Baden here. He's a guest speaker.
Amazing.
I'm also, this is my year of chaos as well, both literally and figuratively.
Yes.
It's Russ's too.
Yeah, some pretty intense shit is happening, actually. People keep asking, so how's your year been? Pretty intense, actually.
Chaotic.
Hobby-wise, I picked up, I had an army of World Eaters, Death Guard, T-Sons, and EC. So I'm working steadily on those. I'm aiming at having a unit done per week.
Right.
Just so I can slowly creep up in preparation for WTC, because there's going to be a manic period of you know, testing out lists, and you don't really want to cut into your practice time with your hobby time.
Mm.
True.
And that does not gel well with the perfectionism that I have when it comes to models. I mean, they don't have to be picture perfect, but they do have to have a bit of spice on top, you know.
They also all have to be gun metal.
Yeah.
iron within, iron without. That's a great choice. Yeah. I mean, fantastic. Yeah, like, wicked. Wicked.
It's more like desperation with an iron without. But it's
so is that like a cool Aberdeen-y, Perturabo-y conversion then?
Yeah.
Is that what that's about? Because that looks great.
It is.
Can we'll get a picture.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a picture of your army, buddy. We'll post it on the Instagram so that people can have a look at it.
Well, people will be able to watch it live on the bar tonight anyway. So you'll get some nice close-up shots.
Ed, if you get some nice pictures, we'll put that on the Instagram as well.
I will.
That'd be wicked. That'd be well good. So, Ed, what have you been working on,
I've just had an enormous dump load of terrain appear from March of War, which has been fantastic, along with all of the Trench Crusade stuff. So we've got so much stuff to work on because I want to just get some nice scatter done for the barn. And also want to be able to make this Trench Crusade board. So we've got modular trench systems. We've got all these like barricades and sandbags and ammo crates and just everything you could possibly imagine, like bunkers, everything. It's really cool. So a lot of that to work on. I haven't started on it yet, but that's going to be a project over the next coming couple of weeks. And I've also built a couple more Achilles Ridge Runners for the GSC so that I can start to move towards running different GSC lists, because at the minute I'm kind of locked into one list. So I'm just going to steadily expand them now. We've had a couple of people like Sam Nash has lent us a few armies to the barn, which has been really helpful because I was literally just about to embark on painting up some more of my Grey Knights and also my Imperial Knights, because obviously they're coming out, and he's just lent me both armies, which is amazing.
Great.
So now I've got more time to focus on the terrain aspects in the GSC. So very good lad. So shout out to him. Obviously a shout out to Michael Corr from Didcot War Games Club for all the terrain that he's lent the barn as well. But yeah, we're getting there with it. So that's what I've been working on.
Nice.
Lots of stuff.
Cool. Well, it's also my year of Chaos Beto as well, so I share your chaotic influence there, which is quite fun. And in regards to your comment about like practice time and hobby time, like I have had zero time to practice my CSM army, and it seems to be doing all right, so I'm kind of cool with it. I've been getting through my Word Bearer's Force, the Ascended Suns, at the moment, ready for the old Battle Barn appearance, because I'm borrowing some units from Sam, obviously, for the Battle Barn game on Saturday. But also, I'm painting through some stuff. I'm painting through my Dark Prophet-y Issa Riot guy, which is quite cool, so I'm quite having fun with him. And I'm getting through Chosen, although I'm kind of desensitized by like the trim, armor trim now, where I just see armor trim in my dreams / nightmares now.
You were like, I'm loving all this armor trim, it's great, and now you're like, I hate it.
No, do you know what? I don't necessarily hate it per se. It's just like, it's quite
a lot of it,
you can't do it ever so slightly tired, because if you fuck that up, then you've ruined it a little bit.
Have you tried these new trim pens, the metal trim pens?
I have, but they don't come in Emperor's Gold, Ed, so I can't do that.
Well, can you do then?
So I can't.
I have a simple trick for you.
Go on.
I am very much familiar with the purgatory of Chaos Trim.
He would be.
I am. You need to have yourself a good metallic paint that flows really well and doesn't get bogged down, which is a bit finicky and tricky to find. But if you varnish your model and if you just have one of those small cotton swabs, even if you make a mistake, you just take it off.
You
That's
beauty.
That's it. Save point.
You beauty. What a great idea. Fucking hell. All right. That sounds great. Nice. Yeah, love that. That's brilliant.
You're going to learn some shit today, Russ.
Yeah, I'm sure I am. And, of course, I potentially want to have a go at cracking on with some Death Guard. Although, to be honest, I'm tempted to just leave the hotness to be the hotness and just carry on with CSM, because I'm really enjoying that at the moment. And I've got an idea for a unit of Chosen where I'm going to do... I'm going to have a little cool unit of five Chosen that I'm decided I'm going to do like a Thousand Suns guy in there, a Khorne guy in there, a Plague Marine in there, a Noise Marine, and a Fallen Dark Angel in there as a unit of cool, like, Chosen to
Very
hang
cool.
around with my Dark, my Apostle and stuff. But there you go. Nice. So a lot of chaosy goodness, but it's all cool. Did everyone see the cool reveal for that new Imperial Knight as well?
Like, yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it?
Oh, he looks quite cool with that massive plasma, I'm going to fuck you up gun that he has. Yeah. That looks pretty cool. I'm sure that's
going to
do some damage. So, we better go on to our first topic then, Lance. So, hobby tools. Because I've heard, Plato, that you're a bit of a specialist in regards to hobby tools. And you've already given me some advice in regards to, like, a cotton swab with some varnish there.
Yeah.
So what are some of our essential favourites and what could we recommend to the Warhammer community going out there? Oh, whoever wants to start first.
You jump in first, Beto.
I need to clarify something. So you varnish first and then you apply the trim and then you need a very small, fine cotton swab
with
maybe a bit of alcohol on it just to rub the excess off.
With white
spirits. So don't put varnish on your cotton. No. White spirits work.
Yeah.
They stink, but you need to dab off the excess. You don't want anything flooding the area.
No, fair. That's wicked. What varnish, very quickly, what varnish do you use, Plato?
I use Airbrush Vallejo.
Okay.
It's gloss the premium range. I have a mixture. I typically varnish anywhere between 2 to 5 times per model.
Wow.
Okay.
It depends on the model. So if it's metallic, gloss first, then a bit of satin, and if there's any tabards or any sort of cloth there nearby or anything of the sort,
nice.
I just go with a mixture of matte and satin. And
okay, nice.
Creates a nice save point, you know?
Every time
I finish a big phase, just varnish it, leave it overnight.
Oh, no, Squigmar's a massive fan of the concept of, like, the save point varnish vibes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Saved my ass a couple of times. So let me set the stage on the hobby discussion. I think I started getting into the hobby in 2019 when I moved to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Pandemic came in. I think I've tested close to 500 or 600 products at this point.
Wow.
Wow.
I was not married at the time. Disposable income was not an issue.
Ed can tell stories about that and his hoarding and his absolute fucking, like, yes. DW hoarding.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And being an engineer, every time I use a less efficient process, I lose time. And that's not something that I have an abundance of these days. So it's more of a medium of not repeating the same task twice or go doing once-overs or repeating the same process. It's just a nightmare for me. So I have a top 10, you see,
nice.
Of things. I'll get started.
Okay, go on.
The number one thing that I would say to anyone coming in this hobby, if they want more than one army, is to get an airbrush.
Ooh, controversial. Interesting.
It is controversial because a lot of people, I wouldn't say don't know how to use it, but don't know how to use it well, especially if you have dual action. The majority of the times that I see someone is just take the airbrush, boop, boop, pull it all the way back, and you flood the model with a lot of stuff. But if you have more than one army and you're willing to go the distance to build yourself 2-3, I have 8 armies, for example. I wouldn't be able to go through those without an airbrush. It's just nigh impossible for me.
Interesting.
Second would be good hobby tools, the basics. If you get the basics right, everything else kind of handles itself, right? A good nipper. The ones from Tamiya, for example.
Tamiya are great. I can recommend them.
A good X-Acto knife.
Mm-hmm.
I found the GW ones expensive and a bit wanting on the quality side and the durability side, unfortunately. And that's kind of the gateway in the hobby. There would be lighting. So if you have anything within the 5,000-6,000 Kelvin range, that's more than enough for what you need.
Yeah, hobby lights are important. I've got one of those sort of movable strip arms, and that's really good. Really good.
You would have your basic run-of-the-mill, especially if you're using an airbrush. If you have masking tape, masking putty, anything of the sort, if you're really trying to concentrate on something and you've done a fantastic job on a weapon, and then you remember, oh shit, I need to airbrush again because I missed the spot, just mask it off, boop, and peel it off.
Mm.
And that's wonderful. Brushes. One good brush. Maybe 2, a size 1, maybe a size 0, and a lot of crappy brushes.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about this.
That's me. Yeah.
We talked about this recently, actually.
Yeah.
And you don't use it for everything. Like if you have your nice sable brushes from Raphael or Da Vinci or Winsor & Newton, you don't use it for everything. You don't use it with metals. That just ruins brushes, like sable hair brushes ruined completely. Ooh, you don't use varnishes. You don't use texture paints. You definitely do not use washes and contrast paints. That's for finesse only. The rest, lots of crappy brushes that you can buy for 10 quid or 20 quid.
Yeah.
There's obviously the higher end, especially in the UK. There's a company named Rosemary & Co.
Oh, yes. I've heard of these guys. What, yeah, yeah.
They have an evergreen line. I had them for 4 years. And they still hold the point, and they're synthetic.
That's so amazing.
Ooh. Because I have a lot of metals, and I work with a lot of metals. But I do take care of them, like religiously take care of them. I'm finished. I dab them in soap.
Yeah, but I'm really good at that.
That's your engineer discipline coming in there, though, lad. Like, I'm like a shoot from the hip muso, so I'm like, oh, fuck it. It's fine. My pedal board will sort itself out. It's fine. It's all good.
I like to call it process discipline, and this is something that I tell my team at work as well.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get in that habit and you're not just artsy fartsy, I just let the magic take me, man.
That's me. That's just me. You're a Plato with different personality types, lad. I'm not an engineer by default.
To each their own, but you have to understand that you have a price tag attached to your decisions,
yeah,
right?
I agree. That's a fair point.
So you can't complain afterwards when you have to replace your brushes.
No, it's a fair point. It's a completely fair point.
He's done us there. I've just got that ADHD way of like, I'll be painting and then Sunny will go off in the house and then I'll come back 2 days later and I'll be like, ah, not only did I leave my brush with paint all over it, but I left the paint pot open as well. So that's me. Yeah. It's just like,
See, even with my artiness, like my wife is a hobbyist as well. And the one thing that she does, bless her, which just like drives me mad, is she'll leave her brush in water.
Oh, don't do that because that curls
it.
Yeah, there we go.
Everyone's reactions are like, fucking hell. No.
That just hurts my soul.
Yeah, exactly.
I just cringe.
Have you ever done the old trick? This is prime ADHD, by the way. Have you ever done the old wet palette trick of use a wet palette and you're using it to do all your painting, then you come back 3 days later and you open it up and it's got indigenous life forms in it?
One of the reasons why I don't use a wet palette.
I know, it's the same for me. I used to use one a little while ago, but I find unless you are painting shit loads in a given week, I just forget about them and then they just rot. So.
Process discipline.
Yeah, but I don't have process discipline, that's clear.
my wet palette was actually the next one.
Okay, go on.
Whoa!
what can I say? Wet palette, and there's these, you can find them in any art store. Like painting wells made out of ceramic.
Yeah. I got plastic.
More like a block of stone, basically, with some indents. And that helps a lot if you want to control application and everything. Like metals. Metals try to dry out, especially the Vallejo ones. They're a bit runny and they separate easily because they're for an airbrush. So you just dab a bit, control on a wet wipe, or a paper towel, rather. Those are the basics. Oh, and a good scent of dentist tools gets you out of a lot of issues.
Interesting.
Like a pair of fine tweezers. Mm-hmm. I have cats at home, and they're not allowed in the man cave room.
Yeah, yeah.
But every so often, they kind of sneak in like the mischievous fuckers they are.
You don't want pussy hair all over
you. You do not want pussy hair all over you. And every time I varnish, because I have a direct light and one coming from above, like direct natural sunlight, I see a bit of a hair. And if you varnish over here, hair...
Good luck getting it off.
Yeah, it's there to stay.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like your relatives that overstay their welcome for about 2 weeks when they visit.
I wonder why Badden had a monobrow.
fine pair of tweezers, just some dentist tools to get little indents out.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the basics. And if you get the basics right, and it is a bit daunting and a bit expensive to start off on the right foot, but it's a increasing cost of investment because you don't have to replace them as often.
Yeah,
fair. I agree. I do agree your brushes concept a lot, actually. where we talked about buy shite, buy twice in regards to like decent quality brushes. That will go the distance, and as long as you look after them and you know you have your discipline, so to speak, you will have a decent bit of kick that lasts you a while. But then you also have a lot of crappy brushes that you'll do your everyday slogging with that will probably like come in handy for stuff. The only thing that like I must confess that I agree with pretty much everything you said, Plato, to be fair to you, buddy. Like you raised some really good like advice there. Just I'm not part of the airbrush cult yet, and I don't think I will be anytime soon, if I'm radically honest with you. I just don't like the tactile process of an airbrush compared to traditional painting. And I know that in terms of time saving, there's obviously massive advantages associated with airbrushing for that. But my concept is a lot of the colour schemes that I do are a little bit too complicated for a classic airbrush situation, where they're either split schemes or, in the case of CSM, with like a lot of trim and stuff, where by the time I've got my airbrush out, cleaned it, done multiple layers of what I've done, I could have just base coated, washed and dry brushed, or like staggered across a long period of time, especially if your hobby time is stolen, so to speak, where you have like incremental time of like 15 minutes here and 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there. I could literally base coat some shit, one 15 minute, wash some shit in another 15 minutes and dry brush some stuff in another 20. And I get a very similar-esque effect to that thing. So, and then I still have got to do the fucking trim and stuff anyway, which you have to slog through with a brush, right? So, but
airbrush is not for everyone. For me, it wasn't love at first sight, right?
Yeah.
I got myself a shitty airbrush at first.
Yeah.
I had a horrendous experience with it. I got my second airbrush, which was substantially more expensive and finer. I've had it for 4 years now. And then my wife, God bless her heart, got me the new Harder and Steenbeck 2024 Evolution with a Titanic tip.
Yeah.
It was like, the way in which I would compare it is the following. I used to be in the automotive industry, and once you go electric, you tend not to go back, not really, right? And buying an airbrush, even a cheaper one, if you have an Audi, for example, a petrol Audi, buying a electric Skoda is more akin to a petrol Audi than it is to a petrol Skoda, right? And once you use it, once you prime without the rattle can, once you varnish, once you glaze, once you apply very thin tints of contrast paints that are diluted and they don't run anywhere, you're never going to go to the brush. You're going to dread it. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to escape the paintbrush completely. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? For me, that I have a very limited time window daily in which I can do my stuff, it helps just if I have 20 minutes, that means turning on the airbrush, priming, cleaning in 5 minutes flat, boom, I'm done. 15 minutes, done.
Yeah, no, fair.
It does always disgust me how fast airbrushes can get armies done. And I'm like sat there slaving away with my dry brushing and my sort of contrast layers and bits and bobs. So it's a skill. I think I don't really understand how to use my airbrush properly, clearly, because Plato's going to teach me. So I think, you know, I've got all my pressure wrong and all this sort of stuff. And I think that's probably one of the reasons I don't use it very much. Yeah, I know. It's just basically I'm hosing it everywhere. So it's okay for like getting base layers down, but I can't do anything fine work with that much pressure because it's like it just blows everything off of the model. So I need to figure that out. But that's why I've kind of veered away from it for anything bar big base layers. So yeah, it'd be good to use it properly.
I do have one more thing to say about hobby tools, which is more of a esoteric kind of thing. Learning how you can manage your time and keep the peace is vitally important.
Especially if you're a dad.
Man. I'm not, but I'm very involved in the household, especially if you have a partner or a spouse, if you have responsibilities. This is what kind of got me in those hobby tool discussions, right? I want to be as efficient as possible so I can keep the peace at home and at work and in my personal life, but also do a lot of hobbying in the meantime, because I value myself as being a competitive player, and I want to put armies on the field really quickly. And if I don't have the time, I'm just battle readying it, varnishing it, so I have my save points. And the next tournament over, which is actually what happened this ITT.
Yeah.
So last ITT, I had a bunch of personal problems. I had 5 days to assemble and paint an entire army. Didn't look spectacular. It is what it is. But this time around, I actually had people stopping by the tables.
Nice.
This is really nice.
I think that's it, though, isn't it? Like, sometimes in order to get stuff out, you do have to sacrifice a little bit of your pride sometimes, right? Where, like, due to, as you say, unfortunately, sorry about your personal circumstances, but, like, you know, you're absolutely right. But even then, I think you've got to be a little bit kind to yourself, and as much as, like, you know, you are going to be your own worst critic in that regard. And for every time you think that your army looks crap, like, someone else's looks worse, right?
Where,
like,
yes.
I'm sure at that event, someone else's army will look way worse than that, right? And it's just, but equally speaking, nothing fills us more with pride than putting something on the table that we're like, oh yeah, actually, that's cool.
We talked about this the other episode where we were talking about getting stuff commissioned and how we have like the pride of painting our own stuff. Obviously, nothing against people who do commission, but
this is obviously a very complex subject. But it's okay to criticize yourself, in a healthy manner, but you don't have to hate yourself for what you've done, right?
A painted
miniature, always better than an unpainted one.
100%.
I totally agree. Totally agree with that sentiment. That is a huge sentiment there that I totally see. For me, very quickly, I would also recommend, obviously, Vortex Mixers. We've talked about this before for me personally.
Yes.
Vortex Mixers are cool. For me, because I do a lot of dry brushing, I quite like a nice wooden dry brush palette. I don't like the textured ones per se, but like a slightly textured wooden dry brush palette. And obviously good B&J's brush cleaning soap.
You
want a good old BJ. Like BJ's work quite well.
Green Stuff World actually make a liquid one that's really, really good.
Nice. That's cool. I'm just old school. I just remember seeing this in like art shops and stuff when I was younger and being like,
it is good.
Quite cool. And of course, the old Skardis IKEA war mounts with all the various like pot sized things just to keep that out of the range of like little hands and other things as well, right? And also to make your hobby. So, fucking funny you should say that. Yes. When you're nicking my Emperor's gold, you little fucking scallywag.
They went to his house and stole it. I'll add a couple more. The WoW stick that you got me. I play with Russ's WoW stick. It is, you can quote me.
How are you finding that?
Russ's WoW stick?
it's a little drill, like an electric drill for drilling gun barrels. And it's really good. I use it all the time now. Generally speaking, what I do is I've got like a really thin, normal like hand drill, like one of the twisty ones. I just get the accurate pinpoint start position with that. And then I just go to the WoW stick drill and I just
misheard that, mate.
Sorry. No, it was deliberate.
Oh, okay. So he played with your WoW stick.
He loves his WoW stick, although his WoW stick is a little bit thinner. So,
It is a little bit,
Any other tools, Ed, just to round this off?
Agitator balls for your paints.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Get those bad boys in your paints.
That's an interesting choice. Although a lot of the army painter fanatic come with them in belt. So there you go. Mm. It's all good.
Sadly, the Games Workshop ones don't. So you have to slip a couple of balls in there.
Very quickly, Pato, because I'm not going to judge you, but I am very curious, right?
Yes.
What make of paints do you use? What do you use in terms of your... Or do you use a bit of everything? Are you a paint slut? Do you like to get involved with all your paints?
I think I have 300-ish paints.
Cool.
So my main workhorse is Procro.
Oh!
And Vallejo.
Oh, interesting.
I have the contrast range from GW in dropper bottles, but that's kind of where it stops.
In dropper bottles, interesting. Because aren't those pots ass? Aren't they the stupidest pots ever conceived by mankind, right?
I have the Chimera line. I have some from a company in the UK named Darkstar. They have some very interesting metallics. Scale 75 for the more matte finish. But not all the paints, just some of the paints.
What about P3s? Are you a P3 man? Do you like some
P3s? I haven't used P3s.
Revelation.
I haven't.
Right? Revelation.
Metals are always Vallejo and Green Stuff World Pigment, so you can kind of mix between them, get some spectacular results when it comes to obviously, I'm a very big fan of true metallic metal.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
I think that sums everything up.
Cool. Yeah.
Have you tried the War Paint Fanatics?
I have not. I kind of stuck with the things that I liked.
Fair. Russ is a big fanatic, aren't
and
you?
I haven't I experimented as much lately.
Yeah, interesting. Like I've recently jumped ship from a lot of Citadel paints. Apart from some of the metallics that I quite like, and obviously some of the contrasts, which are quite a unique formula in themselves, right? But I've been a massive fan because of the Blanche set of the Fanatic range. I absolutely love that. And of course, the P3s are my absolute go-to, very fancy paints. Like they're quite expensive, but they're very good. Vallejos, I must confess, I'm due to like moral reasons, but also like I don't like the way that they move on my palette particularly, which is weird. Although I've got no beef, just not really for me, if that makes sense. But yeah, interesting. But I was just curious. Sorry, as a quick aside, that's cool. Like, yeah, paint collecting's a bit of an illness, isn't it? Really, because I'm kind of looking at my racks and go like, holy Christ! Do you use any AK stuff?
I use a lot of AK stuff. Thank you for reminding me. I find that the newer AKs are reformulated Vallejo.
Okay.
So the Vallejo ones are kind of hit and go sometimes with quality control. I'm still a big fan of the metal range. There's no better metallic range for me. AK is fantastic. Secret Weapon I found to be an excellent weathering paint. I don't know if you get it here. I think I ordered mine from the States at one point.
I'm a painty slut, and I haven't heard of those guys at all.
Chimera is more of a fancy, artsy, single pigment one. There's, again, very hit and miss in quality control, but there's some paints that are just fantastic. And to round up everything, inks from Liquitex. And some Dalaroni, and a lot of oil paints.
Like what's your favorite white paint?
Ball Titanium.
What a fucking chagger. This is
that's
what you know.
Top lad.
Yeah, that's it. That's the way forward. It's the
a
way
man
forward.
Of quality.
And if you don't want it to chalk, Ball Titanium with just a hint of gloss varnish.
Okay, I use airbrush thinner in mine.
There you go, say. There you go.
Never chalks up.
Yeah.
No, fair. Yeah, that shit is unreal. Like that white is unreal. It's like, I can cover anything. Oh,
it does cover anything.
When you compare it to anything else of an equivalent brand, it just murders it.
No competition.
But if I can recommend some paints to you, Peter, that I think you might like, please check out your P3s. The one thing I will say, don't use P3 metallics because you're a metallic connoisseur and P3 metallics are fucking ass. I don't like them. The colors are nice, but the application's weird.
Metallic connoisseur.
There you go. See, Iron Warrior man. Like you gotta be if you're an Iron Warriors player, right? But their colors that are so beautiful, especially when you've got washes on them and stuff, like insane, absolutely insane. Like I am a red paint collector. So red paint, I have a fetish for red paints. Like I've probably got about 80 red paints, probably about 70 or 80 variants of red paint. Seriously.
See, a man of culture.
Yeah.
Thank you. See, look at this. This is fun.
I have the same issue.
Yeah. Red paints, man. But like...
Same affliction.
But I will say the P3 reds are just something else entirely. Like they just hit hard. They hit hard, mate. So
yeah.
I will have to rephrase my answer on the white. If I'm applying by brush, Ball Titanium, hands down. Yep. But if I'm applying by airbrush, if you have Tamiya flat white, thinned way down, like a drop of paint to 3 drops of thinner, and it's alcohol-based, it is the smoothest finish for white you have ever seen in your entire life.
Nice.
Lovely.
Cool. Lovely. Right, we best move on, because that was quite a meaty subject, to be fair. Yeah. But there we go, very good.
It's good stuff.
So then, guys, the power and street cred of unconventional list making. Is it worth the risk? Yeah. See, I thought you'd like this. So, how do we feel about unconventional lists? Like, is it worth it, Ed? Ed, you can start with this one. How do you feel about this?
I think so, because, and I'll tell you why, because we've talked about this on the podcast before, where it's like, you should be running lists that suit your play style. And I think that if you just copy cookie cutter builds off of the internet that are doing well at tournaments, you know, John Lennon's running the latest X and Y, and you just copy it and run it, you're not going to run it as well as him anyway. You're probably not even going to get what the foundation of the list is about. So you're just going to run it. You're going to not be that good with it. And you're going to be going, why is this in the list? Da, 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 da. Because he hasn't explained it all to you, right? So that's one reason not to do it. The other reason is because if you're, so like on that reason, if I run a list that I'm good with, that I've built up from the ground up, and I'm like, I like this unit because of this, it suits my play style, da, 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 da. You're going to come up with something that is a bit more unique to you rather than just copying the meta shit all the time. Yeah. And eventually you're going to get to a stage where your list is going to be in that sort of unconventional bracket because it's just something unique to you. And then people who you're going to face on the table aren't going to necessarily know how to play against that. Because if I go to a tournament, I can guarantee you if there's 10 Space Marine players there, then five of them are probably running a cookie cutter build off of the internet, right?
Yeah.
If I'm running something completely wildly out there that's just like, what the fuck is this shit? But I built it all and I get what it does and it's all my play style. People aren't going to know what to do against it necessarily in the same way because they're not prepped for that meta list. It's not the same thing. That's what I've always felt like anyway. I'd much rather run something that I enjoy as well. Plato is known for his what we call Plato lists, right? And I think this is why this subject is so good for him, is because he always takes a list that people, or takes an army or a detachment that people are running that's decent, but then he'll just put his own spin on it and it catches people off guard every time because they're like, what the fuck? So like, you've been running Creations of Baal Russ recently. Plato has just finished the ITT with us and he ran a Creations of Baal list, but it's very different to what you've run. So it doesn't even have bile in it, right?
Mm.
Which is, I think, what you wanted to do with your list originally.
Dude, that's like literally what I submitted to the team. They're like, what a stupid idea. And I'm like, excuse me.
You shouldn't have listened.
Plato, did you run Abaddon?
Yes.
Dude, right? And then did you just chose, I presume then, you just chose your bile buff then for every game that you played then, I presume, yeah?
It depends on the matchup. It's very matchup dependent. And this is where I'll get into some of the philosophy behind it, behind the Plato lists. And it's now an archetype, both in Team Romania and in Try Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, I talked to our captain the other tournament that we had. He said, I'm not going to challenge a Plato list. I think it's crap, but anyway. So last ITT... The one in February?
Yeah, February.
Yeah. Went undefeated with CSM. Was the second highest scorer after Alexandra Sacco, who's just a competitive
in the
beast.
Whole event. Yeah.
Wow.
In the whole event.
Wow.
This time it was a bit more tricky because our matrix was a bit off, so I was kind of...
Taking worse matchups.
I was a defender, so I was the first one put on the table every single game. And I did not have a list ready for that role. And it still did very respectable. I think I scored the highest.
You scored the highest in the team anyway. Yeah. So bloody good work.
There is a caveat, a very big caveat to that. This is the product of maybe 50 iterations with the same list against different opponents and against different armies. And I have to credit people in TryHard for helping me out at the beginning.
Mm.
And this started in 2022, and it crystallized in 2023. So the first in-person tournament that I went to, I think I had 100 reps.
Wow.
I was playing CSM Iron Warriors with that detachment. No one was playing CSM. CSM had a win rate of about 20-ish percent.
Mm. Oh.
And I was the top-rated CSM player in the world with a 87% win rate.
Wow. Right?
And it manifested over my first GT in Ireland, Broadsword.
Yeah, Ollie's event, Broadsword War.
Warhammer Fest in Manchester,
mm-hmm.
Three consecutive ITTs. But there was such an intense effort in fine-tuning everything there and realizing what the interactions are.
Yes.
And you're not going to win anything. But the amount of intrinsic pleasure that you gain from it, because it's your baby, it's your creation, no one has anything similar to it, is fantastic. The other caveat to it is that it can easily spin out of control, because you put something together, it looks good on paper, it's going to do this and it's going to do this, you put it on a table and you get slammed.
Yeah.
And you get slammed and slammed and slammed and slammed, and you don't take the necessary step back to divorce your own preconceptions about, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point, though. That's a fair point. I think you've got to walk that difficult line between, like, you actually being right and there's an idea in there worth developing and going, like, actually, no, this could actually have legs, to, oh, fuck, I need to go back to the drawing board now and kind of, like, go, okay, let's kind of redefine this. So just very quickly, because I just have a vested interest in this, roughly speaking, and you know, without going into too much detail, what did you roughly run for your bio list?
It depends a lot on what terrain the tournament is. So this was UKTC terrain. Usually I'm practicing on WTC terrain. Very different.
Of course.
I was running Abaddon, some cultists, a Nemesis class squad because I want to control the fight phase, Cypher, a Rhino, 10 Terminators, 10 Possessed,
ooh,
10 Warp Talons.
Oh, okay. Whoa, 10 Terminators. Very quickly, why? Because I'm really intrigued by that.
Because they are underrated and no one wants to deal with them necessarily. And they just think that they're just Terminators that are going to be on the table. But if they move 7, if they advance and charge...
I quite like their ability as well, the whole like wound thing. That's pretty good, man. That's not bad.
They reroll hits when they dart packed.
Yeah.
In shooting and combat.
Yeah.
They all have the combi weapons. So if infantry is about no bueno, they have a hell of an overwatch if you spike your 6s.
True.
And they're very durable. And they can act independently of Abaddon.
Do you run any Chosen?
I have 5 Chosen with Abby, his honor guard. I have a very interesting motif for the models. I like to have my models very different to everyone else's, so there's a lot of kit bashing involved. And I have their plumes, their little mohawks.
Cool. Yeah, cool. Do you run any very quickly, do you run any vehicles? Like any big
one Rhino.
Brilliant. That's kind of what I'm thinking too. I'm like, why would you bother really? But there you go. Very good. Interesting. Interesting. Terminators. See, I've been eyeing some Terminators myself. That's why I ask. And I'm like, they're pretty good. The data sheet's pretty good. There you go. I need to trust my instincts, Ed. I need to fucking trust my instincts.
You need to have some confidence. You know, just play what you want. And if you get slapped, like Plato says, then you know you go back to the drawing board a little bit and go from there. You know, it's the same thing with my Necrons list. Like, it's taken quite a few iterations. You know, I played a different version of it last weekend with you. Then I played this version of it this weekend. And having come away, I played a game against Danny Everson, who's like one of the best Necron players. He's a really good chap, actually. We had a very good game. He beat me 12-8. But it was close, and I needed to get 7 points for the team for the draw, and we did, which was epic, because it meant that we stopped them winning the event because they got 4 wins and a draw. And we were the draw team. So, sorry, Danny.
Shout out to Team Sigil, by the way, because they were excellent opponents.
It was like he ran a Tesseract Vault instead of Doomsday Arcs, and I was like, this is interesting. And having come away from that game, Danny and I both traded some sort of thoughts. He was like, you should try the Tesseract Vault. And I was like, I'd like it. I'm going to. You should try Psychomancers. And he was like, they were amazing. I'm going to. So he came up to me later on in the event. He was like, I've already made my list with the Psychomancers in it. And I was like, sweet. Now I've made my list with a Tesseract Vault in it.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
I do have one more thing to add on top of that. And I am of the opinion of... the more you rep into it and the more different styles of gameplay you have, as in teams versus casual versus competitive singles. For example, the Terminators on WTC lists, nowhere near touching it, right? So this is my tech, quote unquote, for UKTC terrain, right? And just because one thing works in a particular set of circumstances does not mean that it works in different circumstances, right? And you have to be very surgical, in a sense, in figuring out, hey, this does not work for my list, especially when you're in a team's environment. This does not benefit my team whatsoever. This is an ego pick because I like them or I like how I painted them. So sometimes they don't perform and that's fine, but you need to be able to maybe take a very hard look at what you've written. And I always have this introspective thought with both the team in Romania and Tryhard. Hey, this is what worked. This is something that I'm on the fence of. This needs to go.
But it's good to be able to do that, right? And I think, you know, you've got to look at, like, the different terrain sets. It's something interesting because in the UK, we mostly play on UKTC terrain, right? At all the sort of major UK events that are run by Zach. There are a couple of other ones, like Glasshammer have their own set of terrain. And then you've got, like, obviously a couple of people will run some GW stuff. Like, we had at our team event, Russ. Obviously, Michael was running the odd set of Games Workshop terrain, which was cool. But you've got to look at when you're building a list, it's going to be very different, especially I find as a very heavy shooting or heavy melee army. Because if you're playing on a WTC terrain board and it's very dense and there's tight lines of sight, that's going to be quite hard as a shooting army to get those lines of sight. But equally, if you're running melee armies, you've got to look at the distances you need to cover from your like staging points behind a ruin. Because on UKTC, sometimes there's quite a long way to go. And if you're not fast, like Bile or World Eaters or something like that, then it's quite hard to cover those distances if you don't have advance and charge or quick movement speed. So you have to think about, what am I running? Where do I need to get to? If you've got like lots of close set ruins, because WTC, you could fight through the walls, which is very different to the UK. You put something an inch away from the walls in the UK, can't touch it unless you come through or round. In WTC, you could fight through the wall if you could end the charge in the wall, right?
If you're infantry,
yeah. So that makes a big difference to the way you're building your list. So it is something that I don't think many people take into account at the minute, like general players. Obviously, like top players will, but a lot of general players, we just play the same terrain every time. We just don't even really factor it.
Someone, but I'm not going to say who, but someone has a fresh new WTC terrain set.
I do indeed. We need to get some base plates for it, but I think we're going to just try and run it without for tonight.
Ooh. Maybe.
So we'll see.
Does this mean you're going to get fucked by Bile twice in one week?
Yeah, we're actually going to run UKTC because Plato's list is designed for it. But yes, I probably... Hang on, wait. I'll get fucked by Bile once in 1 week.
I don't think so.
I will.
So if Plato
beats me tonight...
You're getting chaos right up your ass, mate.
Then you're in trouble for Saturday.
I don't think this is a question of if, mate. I think this is a question of when, quite
frankly. I'm running Custodes tonight.
So
it's going to be a bit
different.
Fun
fact... I've known Eddie for close to 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Never played him.
Oh,
that is actually true. You haven't, have you?
No.
It's because I've never got any time for online events, and Plato is obviously in a different country to me most of the time. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
It's about to happen.
You're just going to get fucked by chaos this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to get fucked.
Not only you haven't had chaos on the channel that much, and now you're going to have them both in 1 week.
Tarzan did say chaos is, soon.
Just getting Iron Warrior and Word Bearer Bakake this week. So it's all cool. It's like It's Van all over again. Right then, cool. God. Okay, great. Awesome. And speaking of It's Van all over again, we're going to round things up today with our lore topic, Plato, as we always do, because lore is awesome and we all love a bit of lore action. So GW's use of plot armor for their protected characters. Is it a problem? Should you kill your darlings? If I may, can I begin with this? Because we've taken
you
it
far
in turns.
Away.
Thank you very much. What I think is really weird about plot armor within the context of 40k, right? It's just like, we know for a fact how unbelievably brutal this setting is, right? Cady has fallen, Tanith has fallen, It's Fun happened, Primarchs have died. Do you know what I mean? Like, there have been some really key, important plot events that have defined moments in the lore that have been absolutely awesome. Obviously, Sanguinius dying being a massive thing for, like, Blood Angels lore and really important to, like, their whole... you know, Black Rage thing and being a thing that actually helps that army become more defined, right? The thing that I don't understand is why the fuck don't GW do that more often, right? Because technically, Warhammer's kind of a historical war game in as much as I kind of understand why they wouldn't and go, well, look, this character's dead now in the setting. Why would they be legal to play? But by that same token, just let it be open-ended for at any point in the last, like, 10,000 years, right? Of, like, lore and history, where, like, you can go, you can just bullshit it and be like, well, look, you know, you fought in the year 37, like, 1,000, right? And with this character was kicking around. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's fine. It's, like, it's not that big of a deal, right? But, like, Horus Heresy does that. Well, like, you know, you know, there's a lot of death that happens in Horus Heresy. Like, we lose Ferris Manus, like, really quick in the Horus Heresy, right? By Fulgrim, right? And by that same token, he's a playable character in the Horus Heresy. You will have weird matchups that would never have occurred in like, the Horus Heresy lore, where, like, Ferris is, like, pounding on Horus or something, like, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, but it, no one ever questions that. It's like, oh yeah, cool, that's fine. Of course you'd have Ferris, right? And it's like, you know, if you did kill, like, I don't know, like, Chapter Masters or Demonic Primarchs or Abaddon, for fuck's sake, do you know what I mean? Like, you could still historically use Abaddon, like, in your games and stuff. It's just that at this point in history in the lore, he's no longer alive. Do you know what I mean? And that's okay. Yeah. And I just think they're just a little bit, like, control freaky in regards to how they deal with that. Does that make sense, boys? Like, how do you feel about that?
It does. It does. And this is a big pet peeve of mine. I have a lot of the Horus Heresy books.
Sure.
My wife knows 100% with 100% certainty, sorry. If I pass away, she needs to sell that to pay off the house. There's an entire cabinet of armies and the limited edition books, and she is set for life.
Did you get all of the Siege of Terror limiteds? Did you manage to scout those?
I'm missing one.
Which one?
I am missing the final book.
I have that, potentially. Like, which I was very happy about grabbing, so there you go. But yeah, very cool.
We should talk.
As in, I potentially have a spare one, so we could work something out.
Oh.
I will prostitute myself for that
book. What, are we talking about the end of the Death Volume 3, yeah?
Yes,
I have correct. I potentially have a spare one, Plato.
I love this man.
So, I love this man.
So we might be able to work something out, my man. We might be able to work something out. But hey, anyway, let's carry on.
I love your analogy about the Horus Heresy because I like finiteness in my characters. I know I want to have a bit of tension, that there's some sort of skin in the game, right? And when I was reading all the Blood Angels books, which I deeply love, it, this is why I have a passion for Red, I was looking at Dante, he's dying, perfect, fucking finally, after a four hundred years, sorry. And then he's going to attempt the Rubicon Primaries. Ah, fuck me. And he survived. Ah, fuck me more.
I mean, Dante is an interesting example, right, though? Because, like, I think he has the foresight that he's going to be at the apocalyptic end of the Imperium, right? Where he's like that. So Dante is a weird example where, on one hand, I totally agree with you, right? That fucker is, like, hanging on by a thread, right? And, it, like, the poor bastard, like, he needs to be put down, right? But by that second token, I do love the idea that, like, right at the end of all things, right, the apocalyptic end of 40K, like, that fucker, ironically, is still alive, like, trying to do his duty, right, in the throne room. So it's like, but other characters that have no business being alive, like, Abaddon is a prime example, right? Like, don't get me wrong, as a recent convert to the Ruinous Powers, I am reading, like, the Black Legion and Talon of Horus books and stuff like that. I'm like, Abaddon's actually pretty interesting, right? But by that same token, he's had a lot of plot armor moments in the lore where you're like, dude, like, how the fuck are you still alive? And by the very concept of chaos, where it's like this constant, like, thing of sort of, I don't know, like, war masters changing hands, like, even Horus obviously died, like, it feels like chaos wouldn't really be able to hold on to a war master for that long, just because of the nature of what chaos is, right? It should be this never-ending game of, like, fuckers dying and being on in like, situations of power throughout, like, 10,000 years, where, like, one time it's Abaddon, and then another time it's Perdurabo, and then another time it's, like, you know, whoever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
the thing that I'm trying to say is that all the main characters, for example, crossing the Rubicon Primaris was this very dangerous surgery with 50-50 split.
No one's failed it,
yeah. And no one's
somehow, everyone that's a main character, boom.
Yeah.
It's almost like it was like an upscaling marketing ploy, right?
However, if you want a what I think is a lore done right with a lot of skin in the game is Perturabo. Right.
Yeah, true.
So in the Horus Heresy, there was the whole Angel Exterminatus moment where, you know, the snake, I can't stand Fulgrim Edge. He's just off-putting to me. He stole his life essence, essentially. And when he was approached by the proto Plague Marines, which were actually Black Legion, to summon him to Nurgle, because Death Guard weren't the first pick.
No, I know. I love the idea of like a Perturabo Nurgle bastard. Like, that's so cool to me. I love that.
And now you have a lot of breathing space and how you're going to play around with it. Is he going to try to steal something back? Is he this giant hulking machine, like a living dreadnought on life support and So that has a finiteness to it. Everything else, plot armor.
I'm going to go against
all odds, but I survive.
And I think it's the same in regards to like some of the demon primarchs, right? Where they have kind of inbuilt like plot armor in a way where it's like, you know, they just go back to the warp, right?
We
know that like the Emperor's Sword could give like true deaths to demonic creatures, right? So how cool would it be if like the Emperor's Sword just fucking like got rammed up Angron's ass and all of a sudden we don't have Angron being Angron anymore, and like that adds a little bit of balance
pretty
to pivotal proceedings, right?
You told me that Khaldor Drago carved like his name on Mortarion's heart or something, you know?
His master's previous name on Mortarion's heart, right? Which is pretty metal.
I hope he inscribes something that you would find in a British gas station toilet, like 4545.
I
love you.
Exactly. I suck 10,000 dicks, love Becky. Cross, cross, cross.
Khaldor was here.
Wow.
For free BJs. But you know, it's a good point. It's a really good point, right? And like, even some of our most like loved characters probably need to have that like Damocles sword of death like hanging above them one day. Where it's,
feels to me like they've had a lot of like punches in the Horus Heresy series, obviously, and in the sort of past lore. But now in the current lore and going forwards, it seems like all they're doing is bringing people that should stay dead like back. And not killing anyone else. And it feels a little bit like there needs to be, this is, again, we've talked about this before on the pod where we're talking about how we're losing that grimdarkification a little bit over time. And I feel like they need to double down on that. We need to lose someone important.
Yeah.
And it needs to matter. And it needs to drive the plot, you know?
I feel like it's only going to get potentially worse, because if the arcs of Omen stuff unfolds to be time machine-y shenanigans, right? And, you know,
oh, crap.
Yeah. And I've said this on pod, but, you know, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen? Dragon Horus from the past, Dragon Sanguinius from the past, and bring them to the present day. And then we all suddenly start to, like, get really weird about it, right?
I've crossed the Rubicon past Arius.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just,
I think there's a redeeming arc here in how they're going to do the Scouring series, if they are going to do the Scouring series. Mm. Because I think that that's going to set the tone, or reverberate, rather, in 40K as well.
Yeah.
Adding a bit of tension and a bit of skin
period
in the game.
It's a notoriously brutal period in Imperial
history,
right?
And that's how it should be portrayed. Like, I cut you, you're dead.
Yeah.
You're not coming back.
Yeah.
Pour it out for Sigismund, man. Like, fuck me. Like, you know what I mean? Again, Abaddon's plot armor there, right? Which is one of the reason why I was like anti Abaddon for so long, right? I'm not a Templar slash Imperial Fist homeboy by any stretch of the imagination. Like, fuck painting yellow. But my point is that like that moment between like Sigismund and Abaddon, right? Where like Sigismund essentially fucking like deep throats Abaddon with the black sword, like, inside his fucking, like, cavity of his chest. And, like, Abaddon's like, I'm still alive because of dark, ruinous parry shit. Where it's just like, yeah, the Chaos Gods, like, would have probably found that quite amusing. Where it's like, oh, fucking die, like, bleed out, boy. Do you know what I mean? Like, next next champion in line, please. Yeah. Like, don't cosplay as Horus and you'll have better success. Do you know what I mean? Which is kind of true, because Abaddon is kind of like a cosplay of Horus. He is. He's even got the fucking talon, right? So it's like, do you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I think there needs to be a little bit more lethality in what should be a lethal kind of setting, really. Let's be real. Like, it is arguably the most lethal setting in popular culture, one would say, you know. You know, there's more fucking main character deaths in fucking Game of Thrones than there is in 40K, and that's a problem, right? So, you know, we need to potentially think about that. I mean, it's what makes Gaunt's Ghost so awesome. Because at the end of the day, like, Gaunt's whole platoon and the Tanith and stuff like that, first and only, you know, there's only so many of them left, right? That whole world is fucking dead. And, like, part of the intrigue and mystery of it is the fact that, you know, there's not that many left. And, you know, when one of them dies, it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, you lose someone important. And that's how we should feel, like, every day when we,
I mean,
like,
some characters, they just keep bringing back as well. It's just ridiculous. Like, there's this Tyranid called Old One Eye.
I know about Old One Eye. But isn't that the point of, like, the high five, right,
faithful.
Yeah, they actually, there's a theory that every Old One Eye is just a new version of the Old One Eye that they just bring back to shit everyone up in the Imperium because they know of his legend and how he inspires fear.
I love that he has quite a phallic name as well. Like,
Old One Eye.
Oh.
Maybe. The plasma spirit.
Okay, so as a quick aside, because we've got a little bit of time, who, name one character that you would kill from the lore that you think should be dead already.
Oh, goodness. Let's have a think. Have you got one in mind?
I've got two very quickly. Malleus Khalgar. Khalgar should be dead.
Marnius,
whatever, dickhead ultramarine. Yeah. Like, he should be dead, especially now that Gilliman's not
He's armless. Don't worry about him.
Like, armless. And Abaddon. And though I kind of like him now, ironically, Abaddon should be probably dead. Like, Abaddon. Like, I love the idea of a constantly changing Warmaster throughout, like, various, like, centuries for Chaos.
Sure.
And I think that actually personifies Chaos more than what they currently have, which is, like, an Archean, like, overpowered bullshittery Warmaster that's like, I know all the 10 Black Crusades. And I'm just like, fuck off, mate. You spooned those Crusades, like, whatever.
Spooned them.
Like, absolutely spooned them.
If I had to pick one, Kato Sicarius for sure.
Ooh!
Or Khaldor Drago.
Oh!
Like, no! Not my boy Khaldor!
Not Khaldor! Oh, Doom Guy!
They're too OP, especially Kato Sicarius, just this brilliant, wonderful, strategic mind, fantastic warrior, schlong like 2 kilometers long. His breath never stings. He never dies. True. He never bleeds.
Unless it's a pussy, but there we go. But, like, you know, like,
it's just insane how you can distill every single good trait and zero character flaws.
Kato Sicarius, where are they?
I agree with Kato. I don't agree with Khalidor, because the one thing I do like about Khalidor is the fact that he's living in the warp now, right? So what I would like to see with Khalidor is a bit of, like, warp PTSD. And, like, when he comes through the warp to help out his fellow Grey Knights, he's not, like, all there. Do you know what I mean? Like he's kind of a little bit delirious. And he's,
got,
like,
a bit of a twitch.
He's, like, fighting what he feels like are demons, but in actual fact are, like, you know, Imperial citizens. Do you know what I mean? Or, like, guardsmen or something.
You know how I see Kato Sicarius?
No.
Like, the future stoic. In the sense of, I'm rich, I have everything I need, but I'm going to virtue signal and I'm going to pretend I'm poor.
Yeah,
for Christ's sakes.
God, this goes deep, bro. You've got shit with Kato. You're, like, throwing that gauntlet down.
I despise overpowered characters, Imperial Fists.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Bad than
I mean, true! Look, you're true, living up to your name. You're living
up to your name. He's standing on an Imperial Fist.
What's your, very quickly, what's your opinion of Sigismund? Do you like Sigismund?
I do like Sigismund, yes.
Okay, great. Cool. There you go, see.
We can still be friends. That's
right. Black Templars are not all there, if you know
yeah,
what I mean.
Don't, I don't even like Black Templars, but I love Siggy. Like, Siggy's
they,
my man.
They need a lot of leave alone, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, no, totally. Good my choice is, who do you kill?
Gilliman, because he should have been dead already, the prick.
Yeah, true.
I just don't think again, they should have brought him back with all that plot armor bullshit, basically, to begin with.
What, being your brain's, like, fuckboy, right? Like,
yeah, he should stay dead.
It's very weird. That whole thing with Gilliman was very bizarre, right? And I get it, like, in as much as, like, as previously discussed, like, GW loves that Ultramarines blue, right? And it's like, you know, he is the ultimate poster child.
We can't let him die.
Like, yeah, well, he's also like the ultimate like poster child for like a general milk toast Primark leader as well, right? Where he's just like, my superpower is planning really well, but not as well as not as well as Perturabo, but I can try. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. It just, I don't know. Like, yeah, Gilliman's not all there, and the fact that he needs, like, an overpowered Emperor Sword to bring him up at the same melee standards as any other decent melee Primarch is quite interesting as well.
Robert yeah. Gilliman, space accountant.
Space accountant!
He's just, like, the most unglorified hero ever. Like, you know, Plato, I don't, just to let you know my cards and stuff, like, despite my year of chaos currently, although some people would argue, like, oh, it kind of still is, I'm a Dark Angels boy. So, like, you know, like, So, you know, Lionel Johnson's my man, and I just compare, like, Gilliman to the Lion, and I'm just like, there is no competition there in regards to, like...
Well, you're comparing autism with space planning, so...
It might be autistic, but my God, can that motherfucker wield a sword? Like, Jesus Christ, as Comrade Kurz would know, bless him.
Yeah. Giving credit where credit is due, yes.
Indeed. So there we go. Ferocious. But we better wrap things up, lads. But well done. Yeah. That was cool.
But
we
went.
Why? Did you enjoy did you enjoy your time, Plato? Did you enjoy your time in the tank? Did you enjoy it, mate?
I have enjoyed it way more than I anticipated. I'm usually not a person that goes on social media or anything of the sort, but it's really nice to hang. I would love it if you would have me back at some point.
Oh,
if
of
I
course!
Have some more stuff.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. Well, you know,
I've enjoyed your dulcet tones, to be honest.
To be honest, you bring balance to the force, right? When me and Ed are pretty balanced. Intense and you're quite like a nice.
He's a calming presence.
Chill anchor. Like, we're actually.
He doesn't
like
know
it.
Me
like
at all.
Yeah, you can find out tonight.
See, funnily enough, actually, like, I feel like we would get on quite well, lad. Like, I would totally give you a hug if I were to see you in real life, mate. So there we go.
Yeah.
See, there you go.
So, let us know, guys, which characters you'd like to see die in the lore. And also, I'm just gonna drink this one in for a second. Like, comment, and subscribe.
I got distracted.
He stole it. I do have one suggestion, though, because we've been talking about hobby tools, and I have a pretty exhaustive list.
You're such a penis.
If we can prop those in the comments with things that
we kind of use.
And there's no kickback or affiliate links recommendations after.
Yeah.
Tons of trial and error.
You're in serious fucking trouble, Ed. God damn it. Like, I hate you so much. You're such a knob, Ed. And fist bump him. He doesn't deserve a fist bump. The fact that he, like, had that obnoxious, like, fucking wine-smelling, like, energy about it as well. Like, god damn. It's like smelling his own, like excrement. Like, what a fine vintage. Yeah.
And thank you to our lovely Patreons. You guys are the true heroes.
Exactly. See, we need to thank our Patreons, you penis. Yeah, thank you, Patreons.
Thank you,
like,
guys.
You guys are amazing. And, of course, please like, comment, and subscribe. Check me out at Count Ruscular Minis on Instagram. Check out Ed at I'm a Fucking Knob at Instagram.com. Plato, do you have any social medias that you wish that you
Zero.
Say? Oh, there you go. So you're a man of culture, but you don't need
I
it.
Will, however, say that if you want to, you know, give a helping hand or some advice to the Tactical Rock in Bucharest, I would highly appreciate it, and we will as well.
Sure.
All kinds of support to new coming. It is the Tactical Rock. Yeah.
Amazing.
We actually trademarked that in Romania.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
Good work.
Well, thank you, everybody. And I'm glad that you enjoyed yourself, Plato. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for
on.
Coming on, mate. It's been
pleasure
a pleasure
to be here.
Thank you, Plato. Thank you to my glorious co-host, Fuckface. And I'll see you on the
thanks,
next
Ross.
In the Tank, everybody.
Do you want me to kick him in the nuts a bit?
Yes, Mato, do it! Do it, my fallen, my chaos brother, kick him in the balls! Ciao!
See you guys.